Yesterday, we were discussing the four kinds of sattva, faith and confidence, in accordance with what has been mentioned in the text. And out of these four kinds, the first three kinds are concerned with ordinary beings. The later one is concerned with special individuals who have great zeal, with great compassionate feeling towards all beings, and who are fulfilling the perfections known as paramis. So we'll talk about those kinds of sattva which concern us, such as the clear faith, the trusting faith, or faith supported by reason, and attainment faith. Now, what is the proximate cause for the arising of this clear faith? We talk about the Dhamma quality as the proximate cause, as also Sadhya Vutu, the object of faith. Out of many kinds of sadhya bhuta, objects of faith, we took out the Dhamma quality as one of them. Later on, as we cultivate sadhya, and as sadhya becomes stronger and stronger, we shall go on discussing the other sadhya bhutas on an extensive scale. Ordinarily, we just say Dhamma or doctrine, but in the domain of the practice, Dhamma has these renderings. In essence, it is the knowledge, I mean theoretically, and then the practice also comes from the Dhamma. And also the results from practice of the Dhamma. They all come under the meaning of Dhamma. So we should understand what the Dhamma means as implied in the text. It means, Dhamma means the doctrine which uplifts, sustains, or bears the Dhamma practicer or practitioner, or the one who practices the Dhamma in accordance with the principles of the Dhamma. Like when you are lifting up something, it goes up and up because you are lifting it up. So too, Dhamma uplifts the Dhamma practitioner, or the practitioner who practices in accordance with the principles of the Dhamma. It helps, sustains, protects, and uplifts. Such is the essential meaning of the Dhamma. So we need first to learn the method of practice before we undertake that practice, so that our life will become uplifted. So first of all, it is necessary to learn the correct method for our own prosperity, for our own welfare. To practice how to practice sila, morality or virtue, how to practice concentration, and how to cultivate knowledge. One must understand the correct method in order to cultivate one's physical, verbal, mental behaviors so that it becomes pure, unblemished, gentle, and amiable. Such kind of process is known as Sutta Maya Jnana, knowledge through learning, through books, through study, through listening, in order to understand the method of practice. And that also is necessary in order to abstain from unwholesome physical, verbal, mental behaviors. We need to understand the disciplines, not to commit unwholesome things, so that our life will not be properly shaped. So that there will be no impurity, no gross behaviors. Then our life will be properly shaped, properly molded. For that we need to know the method and the disciplinary rules. This is for our prosperity. So this guidance or instruction and discipline will uplift, sustain, help, protect those who understand through learning this method of practice, so that their life will become properly shaped through this correct method. And also this learning is also necessary when we undertake the practice, so that we can abstain from what should be abstained and observe what should be observed. So we try to study it on a theoretical basis, from the theoretical aspect known as pariyati, learning or study, namely learning the method of practice and the disciplines which can uplift one or those who understand through learning. In a sense, there are six qualities of the Dharma. First and foremost, we have the quality known as Sakata, meaning well preached Dharma. Well preached is the Dharma. If one practices in accordance with the Dharma, systematically, one is bound to realize the benefit or result of the Dharma as much as one undertakes the practice. So that we can say that the practice and the result are in agreement with each other. They're concurrent, or we can say they're consistent, they are in agreement. For instance, we practice sila, take the vows of precepts known as virtue or morality, sila, in order to purify our physical and verbal behaviors, abstaining from gross or unwholesome physical and verbal behaviors. With the result that our physical and verbal behaviors will become purified, unblemished. That is the result. So that our physical and verbal behaviors will become gentle, peaceful, and amiable. So, there's a relevant effect from relevant cause. In other words, relevant cause gives rise to relevant effect. So the cause and the effect are in full agreement. They're consistent. And we go one step further to concentrate our mind. Once we concentrate our mind, we get peace of mind. So there again, the practice and the result are concurrent. Such is also Svagata. Well preached is the Dharma. And when we undertake the practice of mindfulness, we are bound to realize the benefit by way of the discernment of mind and body, as beginning with the knowledge of the discernment of mind and body, progressing along the stages of insight knowledge, until one's mind is fully purified under the attainment of reaching the attainment of cessation at the maturity of the practice, that is concerned with the knowledge or wisdom aspect. There also, the practice and the result are concurrent, consistent, they're in full agreement. Such also is the quality of Sakata, well preached is the Dhamma. In another sense, by listening to the Dhamma, just by listening to the Dhamma, we feel calm and cool and peaceful. Our mind becomes pacified, calmed, overcoming the gross forms of craving, aversion, and delusion. And that also is the quality of the Dhamma, Svakata, the beginning, the quality of the beginning of the Dhamma. So, once you listen to the true Dhamma, you are bound to overcome, at least specify, your gross forms of craving and aversion. It is quite obvious. That is the good in the beginning of the Dhamma quality, namely Svagata, well preached is the Dhamma. And after listening, you undertake the practice. Then also, in the course of the practice, you realize the result by calming your mind with the practice of Sila Samadhi Pinya, the three trainings, virtue, concentration, and wisdom, with the practice of Satipatthana Bhavana. As your mindfulness is going well, as you are able to note every arising object consistently, then you are bound to realize the benefits of the practice in terms of the purity of your mind and the rapturous feelings called piti, happiness. Such is the happiness of samatha, tranquility, meditation, or concentration. And when you go further, trying to cultivate knowledge, seeing the true nature of objects, we are cultivating inside knowledge, vipassana jnana, and when we come to the stage of uriyabhya jnana, so called uriyabhya jnana, seeing things in a fast manner, passing, seeing the rising and passing way of objects, then your faith and confidence, sada, will rise by leaps and bounds. That is, you are realizing great bliss. At that time, you will not wish to relinquish your practice because the blissful feeling is so good, which surpasses the sense of pleasures manifold, which surpasses the kind of happiness which you can get from sense of pleasures. So such is the happiness of insight. So with the practice, you are bound to feel blissful. That is the tranquility of the mind, and also cultivation of knowledge, which gives rise to blissful feeling. Such is the goodness of the Dhamma in the middleness of the Dhamma. Such also is Svagata, its goodness in the middle. And with the practice, if you reach the maturity of the practice, coming to the cessation of formations, eradicating the defilements, relevant defilements, to the point of no return, you become will become extremely blissful. Because you're overcoming the defilements which can pull you down to the states of loss. That is the goodness in the end. So by listening, the Dhamma is good in the beginning. And undertaking the practice, in the course of the practice also, the Dhamma is good in the middle. And at the end result, that is realizing the extreme bliss of Nirvana, that also is goodness of the Dhamma in the end. So in this way, Dhamma is good in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. Such is Svagata. Well preached is the Dhamma, which uplifts or sustains or helps, protects the Dhamma practitioner. Because the Dhamma is good in the middle, and good in the beginning, and good in the middle, and good in the end. Such is the first quality of the Dhamma. In order to elaborate further what has been discussed, we want to talk about human being, the state of human being. There are various levels of human being or manhood, or rather womanhood. So we first of all, the just ordinary average human being. One has got to be average human being, not below human being. And one should possess the human mentality as a second stage. And thirdly, we should be above average. So we have three things: average person and human mentality. And thirdly, to be above average. So in order to be a human being, an average person, one should possess training, one should possess good conduct. Just the possession of wealth, position, occupation, and authority is not enough. We should possess good training, good conduct. First of all, that is the sila training, the training of morality or virtue. To abstain from physical, verbal, mental behavior, unwholesome physical, verbal, mental, physical, verbal behavior. Not to do what should not be done, not to speak what should not be spoken. Considering them as despicable, frightful, undesirable, possessing this wholesome mental state known as hiri or tapa, moral shame and moral fear of wrongdoing. As much as you possess these two wholesome mental states, you will purify your physical and verbal behaviors so that they become purified and unblemished. Such as abstaining from killing, stealing, and so on. Controlling yourself, not to make mistakes, not to commit wrongful speech, wrongful actions. Then you will be average human being. That means you are a real human being. This will, with this conduct, it'll not be good just for yourself, it'll be good for the society as well, indirectly. You are protecting the society. When one does good, one is doing good for the society. That you have to understand. That is doing, accomplishing two things with one thing, just one thing. I don't want to say killing two birds with one stone. So there's no killing. So at times, now you just purify yourself. By purifying yourself, you're committing good conduct, you are doing for the society, you're protecting the society. That is one aspect. At times, you are doing good for the society because you have sympathetic feeling that society doesn't like or doesn't approve such things like killing, stealing and so on. So you abstain from doing, committing unwholesome things, having sympathetic feeling. In this way, you are protecting the society because you have sympathy for the compassionate feeling for the society. You are protecting the society so the society will not suffer. Now by doing so, you are protecting yourself. That is a reverse. That also, you are accomplishing two things at the same time, just by doing one thing. So, you are, by just controlling yourself, you are protecting the society, you are controlling the society, safeguarding the society. How beneficial it is. This is the practice to purify your physical and verbal behaviors, so that they become cultured, cultivated, gentle, peaceful, unblemished, and amiable. So every time you think about it, you ponder about it, you'll be free from self-blame. You will not blame yourself. Otherwise, if you do something bad, you will be blaming yourself. At this point, you are not blaming yourself. You'll be free from self-blame. Nor will you be blamed by the society. That is paranuvarabhya. Now, if you make mistakes with wrongdoing, you'll be subject to punishment by the authorities. That also is danda, that is known as dandabhya. You'll be free from that as well because you're controlling yourself, you're controlling your behaviors. And whatever volitional act you have done will not just pass away altogether. They will leave behind potentiality to give rise to effect at some later period. So that also is freedom from dukkha-dibbaya, just falling into evil or bad destinies. So you'll be free from that as well. In this way, you'll be free from four kinds of dangers or harm. So the immediate enemy, depending on that practice, the morality training. As much as you undertake this practice of Sila Sikha, you'll be free from these kinds, four kinds of danger or harm. And then, by this, you are said to be an average human being. Because Sila Sikha will make you, will Sila Dhamma, you sustain you, bear you, help you, help them, help you, who have one who practices in accordance with Sila training. Sila Sikha, morality training. So we can say that the Sila Dhamma uplifts or sustains the Sila practitioner. When we go one step further, we concentrate our mind so that our mind will become pure, free of impurities. Because if we don't cultivate our mind, we will become obsessed with immoral deeds such as killing, stealing and so on.
Now, in order to overcome that, you practice Samadhi Sekhas, concentration training, with the practice of Satipatthana, mindfulness practice. Thus, if your mind becomes pure, how nice it is. And if you go one step further, after your mind is concentrated, you cultivate knowledge. Beginning with the activity of mind and progressing along the stage of insight, realizing Nibbana, then you will be above average. Now, with the concentration, you are said to possess the human mentality. That is the second benefit. Now, here, after cultivating knowledge and realizing Nibbana, you become above average person. Above a human being who is above average. So that means that you'll be uplifted from one who is thick with, we call putrajana, ordinary being, thick with defilements, to the stage of an attained person, a noble, pure and noble person. Then it becomes above average. So with morality or virtue, you become average human person, human being. And with a concentration of the mind, you come to possess human mentality, and with the cultivation of knowledge, realizing wisdom, you become human being above average, or above average human being. So in this way, these three trainings, the three dharma, uplifts, sustains, helps, bears the dharma practitioner who practices in accordance with these principles. So there are these three things. First, the practitioner, he or she studies, then undertaking the practice, the actual practice, and the sustaining or helping. The result is the purity of physical, verbal, mental behaviors. If one is able to practice to maturity of a practice, we are bound to come into possession of the Nibbanic bliss. Then you can apply your knowledge as and when you need it. So all these things make you become a practitioner. So helping sustaining means a Dhamma which is practiced, uplifts and sustains the Dhamma practitioner. So in this way, if one undertakes the practice, one is bound to purify these behaviors so that one will be uplifted, one will never be lowered, and once you achieve Nibbana, your life will never be lowered, your life will always be uplifted. So uplifting means uplifting the Dhamma, uplift the Dhamma practitioner. Which kind of practitioner? The one who practices in accordance with the principles of the Dhamma. Such is the quality of the Dhamma in brief. Dhanyas, you can have dhanyas, external dhanyas, internal dhanyas. All these actions of la, unwholesome deeds, which in other words, they are defilements, are more dangerous. They are close to you, they are internal, close internal or near internal enemies, which are akusala and hilisas. So it is necessary to overcome them, to pacify these, overcome these internal enemies with the practice of the three trainings of Sila Samadhi Pinya. And as much as one undertakes the practice, one is bound to overcome these internal dangers. That's all for today.